Good morning. I want to speak to you today about the gay issue. And I want to do it from a perspective, though, that affects all of us today in honor of the day. If you've been coming here a while, you know that we various times come across this issue. And you've heard me teach that it's God's prerogative, it's God's prescription that our most intimate relationships be across the genders, that our relationships be transgender, not the people, but the relationships be transgender across the gender. And there are reasons for that. I'm not going to go into it too much today, but that gender is actually something that's God-given, that it's a gift. It's something that He gave to us for our benefit. It's something that's very real. And it's something that's culturally mediated, not culturally determined, but culturally mediated, culturally expressed. And it's something that He gives us that's appropriate for the level of relationships in the family, in marriage, and in the church. Now, you know, I've spoken about this at other times, and we want to say that here, but, you know, at the Village Church, I hope that you've noticed if you've come here for any amount of time, we want to be a voice not only of command, but also of compassion. So that if you find in yourself difficulty in fulfilling what God says to do, we don't want to be a voice only of command, but of compassion to you. What is our attitude towards you? Supposing you find within yourself, for whatever reason, an orientation that makes it difficult for you to fulfill God's commands, then what do we say to you? Well, we say the same thing really in any area of life. For example, you know, let's say you happen to be a woman, you have a baby. Okay. Now, God's command in that area is for you to be a good mother. But I know in talking with many of you who suddenly find yourselves in that situation, you say, there's a problem here because I'm not really oriented toward being a mother. Okay, I know there are some women, they grow up, they dream of it all their lives, you know, looking forward to having a baby. But some of you say, I don't have the orientation within myself towards being a mother. If you're in that situation, what do we say to you here at the Village Church? Well, one thing we don't say is, well, it's not your orientation. Okay, don't worry about it then. Don't worry about what God says about the situation. But we also don't say, you know, just deal with it. You know, if you're in that situation, you've got a baby, just deal with it. What we do instead, friends, is give you a group called the Mid-Morning Moms Group to help you, whether you feel like you're cut out for this or not, to help you fulfill what God says, knowing that doing what God says actually ends up being fulfilling in very significant ways if you're setting out to glorify Him. And so we have a group that meets weekly for moms. And I guess we've taken a break for the summer. There's going to be a barbecue, and we're going to resume in the fall. Why? To help you to be a good mom, if that's your situation. Let me give you another example. Supposing you're a man, you find that you're oriented toward adultery. Okay, and you say, I'm in a situation, and I find my orientation is toward adultery. What do we say to you? Well, we don't say, well, then, you know, that's your orientation, don't worry about it. We also don't say, well, just deal with it. What's your problem? How dare you? We don't say either of those things. We say instead, let's give you help. If you're finding difficulty fulfilling God's command in that area, we have a men's group. And friends, we do provide a men's group. It meets weekly also. And I'll tell you, it's hardcore. If you want to spend time with guys who are very serious about growing spiritually and walking with Christ, this is a place. It's hardcore. It's a good group. We can recommend that to you. So I hope you see the similarity here. In a similar way, if for whatever reason you find within yourself a sexuality that doesn't help you in obeying God's commands, but hinders you in it, what we say to you is, listen, we have a group. We have a group to help you. It's called GAME, our Gender Affirming Ministry Ensemble. It also meets weekly. I recommend that group to you. It's for people, and it has people in it who want to walk with Christ and yet find desires in themselves that seem to be opposed to that. Okay, so that's our attitude. Just so you know, if you're not here regularly, you don't know a lot about the Village Church, this is the attitude that we take. in any area of where God speaks about our lives and trying to walk with Him. Not always easy. But I want to speak to you this morning about gayness from a different perspective, one that affects all of us. And it's honor of the parade today. What do you do when the culture celebrates something that you consider ultimately harmful? Okay, it's a situation that you might be in as a follower of Christ at times. What do you do when you're in a situation that culture is celebrating something you consider to be ultimately harmful? Right? Because I imagine if you agree that embracing same-sex desires is not the way to go, then I would imagine you feel a little bit in conflict this morning, a little bit feeling uncomfortable when your hometown throws a parade that is meant to celebrate this very thing, not just celebrate it, to revel in it and to take pride in it. What do you do? What should be our response? What should be our attitude in such a situation? And, you know, if I could put it this way, what should be the Christian's response when a culture disagrees with him or her? Or even beyond disagreement, friends, because as is usually the case, the situation where a culture disagrees with you, eventually, it'll be more than disagreement. It'll become a belittlement of your views, or a denigration of your views, or a criticism of your views, or maybe a discrimination about your views. Let me put it a different way. You know, one thing that we talk about here in the Village Church a lot is revolution. You know, we're here to spark revolution. We're here to be a kind of instigator of a chain reaction. That's our hope. How do we conduct that? How do we be the spark like the uranium in an atomic bomb, you know, set off it? What we want here is fission in the Village Church. And actually, you know, you don't need a lot of uranium-235 to set off a lot of power, to set off a bomb. In fact, you only need about a few hundred milligrams of uranium-235 to release the power of about 13,000 tons of TNT. I mean, that's about the mass of a dime. You don't need a lot. And the reason why is because if you split one uranium atom into barium and krypton, if you split one, all these neutrons start flying around and they split others. It's easy to find other nuclei to split. And they split others and they split others, and you get what we call a chain reaction. So as long as you hold enough together to reach supercritical state, you don't need a lot to happen. Well, that's what we are here at the Village Church. That's what we want. We're here to cause such an explosion. Now, these are violent images that I'm using, right? Talking about revolution and bombs, you know, what is it exactly that I'm advocating for you to do when I talk that way? Okay, am I advocating that you bring your guns to church? What am I saying when I say, let's conduct Christ's revolution, let's spark a revolution? How do we cross the parade today? Well, what I would like you to do is look at this passage with me. I want to direct your attention because this passage gives us excellent counsel in how to conduct actually a revolution, Christ's revolution with us. I'm going to be concentrating mostly on verses 17 and 18. If you'll look at them with me. Verse 17 says, repay no one evil for evil. Repay no one evil for evil. And friends, I would suggest to you that it is imperative that we deeply understand what's being preached in that passage, in that very verse, in that very phrase. When it says, repay no one evil for evil, you realize what it's saying is that this is Paul writing to the Romans in a culturally different situation than the way that they were being taught to live. These Christians in Rome, he's saying, look, repay no one for evil for evil. What's he saying? He's saying it's very important that you do not adopt the practice of those who oppose you. If you want to change things, friends, it's very important not to adopt the methods or the goals of your opposers. You cannot adopt the same attitudes or the behaviors, because then you're not really changing anything, right? You know, all you're doing is tipping your hat to the new constitution, take a bow for the new revolution, just picking up your guitar and play, just like yesterday. Get on your knees and pray. We don't get fooled again, right? You're not, it's just like the Who said, you're not really changing anything. It's not a revolution to do that. You're not sparking any change. But this passage says, no, you move in the opposite direction. And especially you take that issue by issue. So someone recently was asking me, someone came up to me in this church, said, what do you think about the murder of George Tiller? And if you haven't been following that, that's the doctor in Kansas who performs late-term abortions. And some people he's a hero, other people he's not. He would perform late-term abortions for health desperate situations. But there's a certain body of evidence that's been amassed, and this is the real question, is that he would actually perform abortions for people even when it wasn't health-threatening situations, even if it was just the parents' wishes. Okay, there's a certain amount of evidence to say that. That was the real question. But if that's the case, then the person was asking me, well then do you approve of somebody murdering him, you know, to stop these things from going on? And what my answer was, no, because when somebody takes a life, the taking of a life, it doesn't justify an individual taking that person's life. See, because that's repaying evil for evil. That's not fulfilling this verse. And God doesn't give that right to the individual to do. So that's the principle, you understand? You've got to move the opposite direction, not in the same direction. You don't take life to try to affirm life. Similarly, if we have a belief that a same-sex couple is not rightly enjoying the gift of relationship, that does not justify a severing of relationship with them. A kind of also misuse of relationship. In fact, friends, you should do just the opposite. In order to fulfill this verse, what you should do is cultivate godly relationships with them. In fact, it's important for you to be in relationship with them. Have good gendered relationships with them. Let them feel the respect that you bear them as people who bear the image of God. Important for you to be in there and to have good relationships, healthy gendered relationships, because you know people respond to gender even if they don't believe in it. So what we're called to do, especially with our friends, if they're making these kinds of decisions that we can't agree with, is to instead enjoy them, cultivate relationships. And you know, there's usually, with these folks, there's usually a lot to enjoy. That's what this verse is calling us to do. Enjoy them. Even with family members, because I know that's sometimes an issue. And that's difficult, you know. How do you deal with family members, even closer? It's a harder case. I would say it's still, the overriding goal for you is to maintain relationship. Now, I know that just to say that doesn't answer all the questions that you might have in deciding how to respond to adult children who are embracing same-sex relationships. Or for some of you, I know, adult parents who are making these decisions. I know it doesn't answer all the questions. It's difficult. But I think that maintaining the healthy gendered relationships should be the overriding goal, overriding priority that's guiding you. Because, you know, the gay and lesbian identified condition, my friends, is really much more about the relationship with the other and much less about sex than you are probably led to believe. And so to cultivate relationship with the same sex attracted is actually to fulfill this verse, is to not repay evil for evil. Now, I know that talking about this is difficult for some of you. Feel sensitive about it. For some reason, this issue somehow looms large in your thinking. And I just want to tell you that when you're in a situation, when you have a certain sin that looms larger than other sins, it's helpful for us to make the comparison with other sins in a similar situation to help us decide how to respond, how to act. Okay? Because, friends, it's just sin. It's not like we're unfamiliar with that in our lives. Right? Okay, I'm listening for an amen. Okay. And so you take a situation and you let it guide your thoughts and your actions. Take another sin, but in this case, got to be a sin of which the culture approves to help you decide how to respond to these situations. So let's take greed. Okay? Now there's a sin, clearly a sin, but it's often celebrated as a virtue in our city, isn't it? I mean, if you look at the kind of debacle that's going on now with the financial system, why is it that the faults of the financial system aren't really, really being addressed? I was reading an article of someone who was laying out, say, you know, you really could build a system. You could really build a new system with some differences so that it's still a system that allocates capital where it's needed. It gives investors accurate and timely financial information. It increases value to shareholders and creditors. It rewards taking prudent risks and avoids all this other stuff. You can build a system like that. Why is it not really getting built? It's because the culture, in some ways, it celebrates greed at times. So imagine, if you would, a parade or some gala event. We'll call it the Gordon Gekko Parade. You know, people hold up signs, march down the street, and say, greed is good. Okay, in fact, people get very close to saying that often around here, don't they? Okay? I imagine there are gala events like that. They're not inviting me. I don't know why that is. But imagine if that's the case. How would you cross that parade? What would be your reaction in that situation? Well, what would we do, friends? We would mourn. Would we not? We would mourn. We would mourn for those who feel that they must sell their hearts out in pursuit of the bottom line. We would mourn for those who feel trapped in that lifestyle. We would mourn for those who define themselves by something that is ultimately destructive to their humanity. Would we not? Well, is that all that different from the parade today? So one thing that we should be doing as we exit this morning is we should be mourning the people in this parade. Mourn that in an event like this, this is a real tragedy, those who do struggle with certain feelings within themselves will be forced to define their identity according to gay orthodoxy. They'll feel like there's no other way. And they feel like they don't have any other choice. And mourn also people that will use today to receive affirmation in the wrong place. And purpose in your own friendships to await an opportunity to provide the alternative. Verse 18 says, live peaceably with all. Live peaceably with all. What that means, friends, is that in our relationships, we should shoot for what I call the being surprised scenario with our friends. Okay, we want to shoot for the being surprised scenario. What does that mean? That means that you have shown such love, such acceptance, such admiration, even for people who disagree with your views, that they are surprised to find out that you disagree with them. That's the being surprised scenario. I recommend that for our friendships to fulfill this verse. That they're surprised when they find out eventually that you cannot approve of some of the decisions of their lives. And, you know, you always have to be ready for that moment because it does come eventually. And it's up to God's sovereignty as to when it comes in the relationship. But this is what you should be going for, I would say. Okay? And now that means there are situations where you don't have to say anything in a relationship. And there might be then other situations where you do have to say something. Let me give you some examples. Okay? First example of when you really don't need to. Someone also in this church called me up and said, look, I have a difficulty here. Because he was in a situation where some friends of his, a lesbian couple, were getting artificially inseminated in order to raise a child together. And he was put in a situation where it was a party or something, and he had to respond. A response was demanded of him. And he didn't know what to say. So he said something, and he called me up and said, was this a good thing to say? And what he said was, what his response was, sincerely, I wish you every possible happiness. I wish you every possible happiness. And he was saying, now, was that okay? Should I have said something different? And I said, that was a terrific response. Because, for one, it was true. He did wish them every happiness that was possible in that situation. He absolutely did. They were good friends of his, and he did. And I said, you can relax a little. You know, honestly, I can think of worse things in the world than two women raising a child. A lot worse things. So you go for the being surprised scenario. You know, God is sovereign. Relationships might turn out differently. That's your goal. That's your attitude. That's one example. Second example, where you might be called upon to speak. Supposing your high school puts on a Silence Day event. Now, I don't mind you guys leaving those doors open. All right. Their decision. All right, supposing your high school puts on a Silence Day event. Now, you know what that is. That's where you have a day of silence where you don't say anything out of honor for people who same-sex desires who've had to be silent about who they really were. And the idea is to honor them, you know, and the difficulties that they've faced and discrimination and things like that. And supposing your high school puts on that Silence Day, what should be your response? Well, you could take my son's approach, which is to be so unaware of the school's activity, is to not even realize it was going on in the first place until it was all over. Okay, that's one way of dealing with it. Helpful, I guess, in the situation. But supposing you can't quite do that. Supposing you're asked by a friend who's organizing the event. Like a friend comes to you and says, hey, can you support this event? I'm so excited about it. I'm doing this event. Will you participate in it with me? What do you say? What's your response? Do you say, no, never! Or do you say, well, okay, but secretly, I'm going to give this my own meaning. What do you do? May I suggest an alternative conversation? How about the situation goes like this? Your friend comes to you and says, you know, oh, I've got this great event. I'm planning, I'm so excited. Will you participate in it with me? You say, you know, this is neat. I understand very well what it's like to be different than the people around me and to have the threat of being rejected for who I am ever present. I understand that, actually. And the threat of experiencing even more than that at times, you know, persecution for who I am. Now, that's a painful situation. And I want to praise you, my friend, for seeking a way to address it. But let me just clarify the goal of what you're trying to do. The goal of this event is to bring the culture to a place where gay-identified people are affirmed and encouraged to pursue same-sex relationships. Is that the goal? Your friend is excited because you get it. You say, yes, she says. That's exactly the goal. That's what we're trying to do. And then you say, well, let me ask you this. Would you object to a group that walked with people who didn't want to pursue those desires, but instead to be changed to enjoy a heterosexual relationship in their most intimate relationships. Would you object to such a group? Friend says. She understands what you're saying. Well, yeah, I would object to it. That's the whole problem. We need to help affirm these people for who they are. Then you say, well, then I cannot participate because I believe in and I support same-sex attracted people having a place to share who want help to resist that course because they believe it's not good. In fact, my church has such a group. Can you support that group with me? Friend says, absolutely not. Like, no. And you say, well, you know, it seems like we cannot support each other's activity in this area. But, you know, you're a valuable friend to me, and I want you to know, though I can't participate, I really admire your activism on behalf of those in need. How about that conversation instead? Living peaceably with all. Now, I painted a great scenario here, but I know that some of you are out there sitting there and thinking, oh, this sounds great, Sam. This sounds great, but I've lived a few years. And I know the way these things go down. And I'll tell you, things do not always turn out so lovey-dovey. They don't. Things don't turn out so peaceful. What about that situation? You know, I think, you know, maybe you're looking at one thing going a certain way, but I know what often happens. What may be happening and happening soon in the future of our state. Things are not so lovey-dovey. In fact, I would say then we need to look at the implications of the grammatical forms of verse 18, right? Look at what verse 18 says. If possible, so far as it depends upon you, live peaceably with all. That's what it says, right? Well, to say if possible implies that sometimes it's not possible, right? Doesn't it? To say so far as it depends upon you implies that it doesn't depend completely upon you, that peace depends upon others besides you, that people, because other people are involved, peace is not entirely in your control, and there may not be peace. Because as I was saying in the beginning, when a culture disagrees with you, and really disagrees in a large majority, they're probably not just going to disagree. They may deride you, they may terminate your employment, they may gnash their teeth at you, even hate you. Then what? Then what do we do? And friends, in that situation, what we do is look at the king of the kingdom you inhabit. Because Jesus Christ lived peaceably with all, and those all killed him. And to be a Christian means knowing that you are in the mob that did it. That you were part of the rejection of goodness that nailed him to the cross. To be a Christian is to know that though he was peaceable with you, you were hostile to him. That's what it means to be a Christian. A little earlier in this letter, Paul writes in Romans 5, he writes this, "For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more, now that we're reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. More than that, we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we've now received reconciliation." Do you know what he's saying? As we gnashed our teeth at him and were met with kindness by Christ, so we now must prepare for gnashing and meet it with kindness. So this should put to lie the statement that's often made in the media, that if you disagree, you think you're superior. Okay, so often that, you know, you get that. You say, well, if you disagree, you think that you're superior to gay-identified people, don't you? Look, do I believe in my viewpoint? Do I strongly believe in my viewpoint? Absolutely. Do I believe that my viewpoint is superior than the viewpoint of the paraders? Absolutely. That's why I hold it. If I thought another view was superior, I would hold that view. But then do I, because of that, believe that I am superior to the paraders? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that should reflect how I cross this parade. You know, tolerance for a Christian, tolerance for us, means not holding people's sins against them. When you walk across that parade, one thing that you have got to understand is you are not more righteous than them. And that disagreement, cultural disagreement, is a way, is an opportunity to reaffirm that, to bring you back to the foundation of your faith. You're not in any less need of the grace of Christ than those people. I encourage you to go to our website, look at the game page, read the statement that we have on homosexuality. It's been crafted over a period of time. People have really, you know, we've gotten calls from other churches, really appreciation from that. One church wanted to say, can we use it? Can we just adopt that statement as our own? How come? Because that statement really gets at this need for humility among those in the face of disagreement. That's our faith. So what areas of cultural disagreement should do, should lead us to this humility, lead us to this place where we say, ah, this is a place for me to hold back the pride in my heart, to stay pride in ourselves, keep us from haughty actions. So we should take this day, we should make it our day. But for us, it should be the Stay Pride Day. We're staying pride within ourselves, and we should celebrate it and march to that tune of a different drum. Because your Christian life now, friends, this is what it's about. Indeed, your joy now is to bear discrimination, bear hatred for Him. Do you think that this is such a strange experience? There are always going to be points in your culture where you must have restraint as well as affection. God will always leave some points of disagreement between His kingdom and your culture so that you can tell the difference, so that He can tell the difference, so that you can tell where your loyalties really lie. And our lives are to bear that antagonism graciously. You know, I heard from a friend recently who's been a long history of being connected in various parts of gay communities. And he said, you know, it's fascinating to me. I've heard this more than once. It's easier to come out as gay to my Christian friends than it is to come out as Christian to my gay friends. I was very encouraged by that. I said, I'm so glad to hear that. Because that's getting at the point of this passage, the point of this verse. Let's encourage it. Let's be that way. Now, you might have fears, and you say, well, what lies ahead in the way that the culture is going? Are there legal trials ahead for us, maybe as a church? Maybe so. Maybe so. You know, if I'm asked to perform a same-sex wedding, which I cannot in good conscience perform, then that can become a point where there is a legal problem, you know, in our state. And in fact, activist groups might very well seize on that, specifically to put churches out of business. Because when I refuse, you know, then there might be some legal action or something, might lose tax-exempt status, things like that. Now, if that happens, whatever that is, what should be our response? What should be our response in that situation? You know what our response should be? So what? So what? You say, but that's not fair. All the better. Consider your king. Consider the king of the kingdom you inhabit. You say, stand up for our rights. No, friends, stand up for the rights of others, not your own. We don't need to do that. You know, the last time I checked the New Testament, persecution was a good thing. You read Jesus' words, I think he's very positive about persecution. So low-level form of persecution, like discrimination, that should be a positive thing for us too. Because that gives us an opportunity, if it comes to that, to actually be somebody in the kingdom, to actually do something worthwhile for him. You know, in 1818, an extraordinary thing happened in French Peloponnesian islands. On the island of Huaheen, King Tomato became a follower of Jesus Christ, year 1818. And it was an extraordinary thing. He was king in this island, Huaheen. And he realized, King Tomato, that really was his name, he realized that he could no longer go along with a lot of the heathen practices of the island, like burning people alive and things like that. And so he changed, and this upset a lot of the islanders. It was a real contradiction of their culture. And so they resolved to kill him. Actually, the plan of these usurpers, they were going to gather, lay in wait for him, and then they were going to pounce on him. They were going to seize him and burn him alive. But the plot was discovered by some people who told the king. And so when the king came, they were going to seize him and some other people who had become Christians. They jumped out of the boat and they were ready for them. And they actually turned the tables and seized the Caesars, those who were going to kill them. And they had them as captors. And so the people who were captured, the islanders, were sure that they were going to meet a death, a very cruel death. But the king and his followers said, you know, we're not going to kill you. In fact, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to give you a feast. And they had prepared a sumptuous feast for them. It's just an extravagant island feast for them. Sat them down to eat feast with them. And these islanders just could not believe it. Some of them couldn't eat because they were just in such shock. This was so different. And eventually in the evening, one of them stood up. One of the leaders of the usurpers stood up and said, I've decided I'm going to leave following these idols and I'm going to follow Christ along with the king. You know, the result of that was almost the whole island converted within the next few weeks. It's because people realized persecution was a good thing. A good thing. Let me close here. Verse 20 says, overcome evil with good. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. What does that mean? To meet unkind treatment with kind treatment. To meet reproach with silence. To meet defamation with respectful speech. To meet hurt of our interests with the advance of theirs. Friends, that's revolutionary. You want Christ's revolution? This is it. This is how it happens. This is Christ's revolution. You know, the real difficulty in building an atomic bomb is holding enough of the uranium together long enough to sustain a chain reaction. Holding enough of it, even though it doesn't take much, you've got to hold it together long enough in close quarters, closely together, so it goes supercritical. And that's our job at the Village Church. Friends, it doesn't take much. You are the uranium-235. And just by virtue of confessing Christ, just by virtue of living faithfully, you have a spiritual radioactivity. And my task is to keep you in community long enough to go supercritical. So you don't need to surrender, you know, what you believe is right and wrong for relationships. But you need to repay no one evil for evil. You need to live peaceably with all. You need to overcome evil with good. That's Christ's revolution. That's how it's going to happen. Amen.